another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host, Damian Abraham. And once again, I'm bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved with punk, but had their life changed by the genre in a major way. And today on the show, from the Murlocs and from King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, Ambrose Kenny Smith joins me. And this is a fun one. We talk about Australian music history, Melbourne music history, the rich musical history that he is a direct descendant of, and a part of too now, of course, but more on that in a second. First, if you'd like to get in touch with me, head over to the email address, turnoutofpunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother and show producer and guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham, and he will get the message to me. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Left4Damian. If you want to support the show, the best way to support the show is just by telling all your friends about it, letting everyone know that you enjoy the podcast that we do here twice a week now. Well, actually, this week it's going to probably be three times a week, but let them know that we do this podcast. You can also support the show by heading over to the place you get it from and rating it and reviewing it. Thank you to everyone that does do that on iTunes and the like and rating it and subscribing it and to it. And thank you to everyone that does do that. And speaking of support, thank you to everyone that goes over to patreon.com/turnedoutofpunk and checks out and supports the show over there on that thing. I just posted a video version of an upcoming episode. Footnotes is over there. There's a lot of fun stuff there. So thank you to everyone that keeps the show going that way. And speaking of support, this show would not be possible without the kind, loving support of the fine folks at Vans, who came aboard a few years ago and said, "Damian, we like what you do. Just don't do it out of your own pocket anymore." And they helped me cover the cost of doing this thing. And it is very much appreciated, because that's really what helps keep the lights on around here. Who would have thought there are costs associated with doing a free podcast? You know, I'm still shocked. I say it every week, but I'm still shocked about this thing. Speaking about being shocked, Fucked Up is going back on the road come September. We are heading out on the road with a little band called Faith No More for a few dates in the American Midwest. And then in January, we are going to be doing the David Comes to Life tour across parts of the United States, parts of Canada, parts of England, parts of Europe. More dates are going to be announced, but we are going to be going out on the road and playing some tunes. So come and see me live. We can chat. It'd be like Turn Out a Punk in person, but, you know, a lot less recorded well, I guess. Well, maybe you can record on your phone. But that's it. All right, on to today's show. Today on the show, Ambrose Kenny Smith from the amazing Murlocs and the amazing King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Now, I'm a fan of both those bands, but sitting down with Ambrose, boy, was I schooled. You know, I I've talked to friends from Melbourne since, and they are shocked that I did not remember Carson, because, oh my gosh, Carson are a hard rock, blues rock band that is incredibly important to the development of Australian punk rock. And that's Ambrose's family right there. They're right there in this band. Anyway, we talk about all that. We talk about kind of what gave birth to King Gizzard, and we talk about a lot more fun stuff. This is a cool conversation. Anyway, I'm not going to ramble on anymore. Remember to check out King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard put out like literally, I think maybe a dozen different live records this year, but they do have a brand new LP, LW, which is available now on Flightless, and the Murlocs, Ambrose's other band, have a brand new LP, Bittersweet Demons, which you can get on ATO Records. This guy is busy. Does a lot of music. All right. I'm not going to ramble on anymore. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Ambrose Kenny Smith on Turned Out a Punk. Ambrose, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
Well, as I was just telling you off air, I'm a huge fan of the band, but I'm also just like kind of a nerd for not just Australian music, but Melbourne music in particular, because I think there's such a, I don't know, from an outsider's perspective, like such an underappreciated, rich musical history in that city, and that you guys are obviously a part of. So get ready to get nerdy, my friend.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Well, I got to start this off, though, the way they all start off, which is, Ambrose, how did you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across the genre?
Pretty young, probably from skate videos. I'm like a skateboarder at heart. I was just watching like skate videos on Thrasher on YouTube, which I do like every day. I was just a big skate nerd growing up as a kid. So, you know, like skate videos such as like Baker 2G and all that sort of stuff introduced me to like, you know, Ramones and Sex Pistols and all that stuff at a real young age. Like, you know, I remember when I was like 10, I had like this long sleeve, like God Save the Queen Sex Pistols shirt that I wore religiously. I used to dye my hair like, you know, like black all the time. So yeah, and everything was black and it was just, yeah, it was just super obsessed with all of it pretty much. Yeah.
And where'd you kind of get into skateboarding from? Like where'd you remember first seeing that?
Probably my brother, my like half brother. When I was young, I remember seeing him and his friends skate in the street. And I was just like, whoa, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I was just so into it. So yeah, from a young age, I remember like getting my first board, like a fishtail, like supermarket, like board, some weird piece of shit. And when I was like six or something. And then, by the time I was like 10, I got sponsored by like a skate shop. And then, by the time I was like 12, was sponsored by like Volcom and Foundation Skateboards and America's Shoes and the whole sort of shebang. So from when I was like, yeah, from like 10, 11, 12 up until, you know, 18 or something, I was real diehard in it. And then even up until I was like 25, you know, I still skate here and there, but sort of once I finished high school, I was playing a lot more gigs and doing more of the band thing than skating. But yeah, they both came hand in hand, you know, it's a similar culture, similar stuff, you know, similar shit you get up to, bad stuff, fun well, stuff.
Well, it's funny because anyone that's come on this show that does anything at like a super high level, be it like professional wrestlers that have been on or baseball players,
yeah,
or things like that, there comes a point where you have to kind of make that decision. Like, is it going to be music or is it going to be this other thing? Because it requires so much focus to do stuff at such a high level like that.
Mm.
Did you find that with skateboarding?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. I think being young, like when I was like 12, I went on I showed like the whole American, like international Volcom team around Melbourne. And that was full on, you know, like I was just 12 years old and I was showing all these dudes spots and like, you know, they were like yelling at each other, yelling at me to like jump down big rails and do all this stuff. I remember like knocking myself out and like stuff like that. And just like, yeah, it was just so intense. And I just remember being like, holy hell, I don't know if I can keep pushing my body and my mental state, you know, down this rabbit hole, because it's just, you know, it's a bit of a dead end job being a professional skateboarder, depending on how you play your cards, right? You know, and all the time it's just like it's sort of that mentality of going fast and like not really thinking about the end of it, which is so exciting and so fun to be a part of. So I think it was just all those elements was super drawn to, and going to skate parks and just hanging out with older dudes. It was just like, you know, I never really hung out with anyone my own age that much, you know, ever. So it was just always like corrupted at an early age, which, you know, I have no regrets over. I was shown a whole different way of life, you know, from the beginning.
It's funny because you mentioned that, you know, the idea that this is kind of a dead end job, you know, being a professional skateboarder. And like, it is kind of one of those jobs that you can't really do into your, you know, 60s, or, you know, unless you're like Tony Hawk. And how many people are going to be Tony Hawk, right? Like, for the most part,
yeah, exactly,
you know, it's not built to go into your old age.
Yeah, exactly right. So it's all about playing your cards right. But I think all of that is just, you know, I have a lot of friends now that were some of the highest paid skateboarders in the world, and now they're just tradesmen, just like building houses and stuff and doing whatever else. But you know, everyone can have their moment in the sun and fall from grace, but it's just such an amazing feeling, you know, like trying and landing and trickily being focusing on for hours or whatever. It's just the same. It's the same adrenaline rush I get when play a big show or whatever. You know, it's that same just like, yeah, endorphins and everything just kicking in.
So were you playing music kind of at the same time you were skateboarding with like Sam Bros Automobile and stuff?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So when I was like, yeah, when I moved schools in like grade 5 here, so I'm like, what? I'm like 10. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like 10, 11. I was just playing because I was doing music when I was younger. Like when I was like even 8 and stuff, I was like busking and playing harmonica. And I put out like a funny little like a 7-track like EP thing when I was real little, like because my dad's a muso. So it was always like easy to kind of like, you know, do all that stuff or like be thrown into that world. But yeah, I think, you know, then I was pretty embarrassed by that. And I was just so drawn to skateboarding and, you know, that whole thing, which is it's, you know, it's got a bit of a macho boys club vibe to it. So, you know, all the time you're like, oh, you kind of just trying to play your part. But I think, yeah, once I met my good friend Sam Cooper in school, we just, he really encouraged me to keep playing music with him. You know, he was just playing guitar and I'd just play harmonica with him and would muck around and play some gigs here and busk and do whatever. But skateboarding was always just my first thing. You know, I always wanted to just be a pro skater and, yeah, just be involved in that lifestyle because it was just so fun. It was just, you know, not knowing what was around the corner, like every weekend, you know, I could be in Melbourne or I could be in another state like 10 hours away. So yeah, I was just super drawn to that. And I think, yeah, just as I got older into my teenage years and stuff, you know, I feel like you kind of just, the reality is you sort of, if you don't turn pro by the time you're like 18 or whatever, people have the term like man-am. When you sort of like turn, you know, you start become a man, but you're still an amateur skater and it's not looking like it's going to really happen, which happens all the time. So, yeah, I think I just sort of started to realize that, like, yeah, I knew I couldn't really ever, I was never going to reach those goals. You know, it was something that was just so, yeah, it's hardcore stuff, you know? So, yeah.
What kind of music was associated with that scene back then?
Some
of the bands, I mean, like, was Frizzle Rom or those types of bands, or?
Oh, no, I've never been that huge on Friends of Rom, to be honest. I don't know, I was just more, like, if you're talking, like, Australian punk, it'd probably be, like, God and stuff, and, like, yep. Even, like, I don't know, Scientists, and, like, more later on, like, Eddie Current, Suppression Ring, and stuff like that. But, like, you know, when I was growing up in that time, yeah, probably even, like, Saints, like, you know, it would always be just blaring, like, the Saints out. Ghetto Blaster, and we like jump downstairs and stuff, and like, yeah, it'd just be all that kind of stuff, like from Ramones and all that shit, then back to like in Radio Birdman, or I don't know, it's kind of just always spread out because it's just, yeah, it's all kind of sick music to just get you going mental enough to be like, all right, I'm just gonna throw my carcass down this like couple flights of stairs and see what happens.
I think that's better taste than most skateboarding scenes have, though. Like the Saints and Radio Birdman is a lot better than a lot of the stuff that's being listened to at skate parks that I've been to.
Oh yeah, these days skate videos have terrible music in them. It's like everyone's just lost their taste and flair, and no one has much of an edge anymore. It's all the rawness and, you know, all the excitement out of it is just being drained out. You know, it's in the Olympics now, for God's sake.
Well, that's the thing. It's becoming more and more of a sport. Like it's kind of getting pulled further and further from the sort of culture that you're talking about and becoming more and more broadened.
Yeah.
Jock culture.
Yeah. Like it's always had that sort of jockey mentality, I guess, but it's just the nature of pushing yourself mentally to like go beyond what you never thought your body or mind was capable of doing. And, you know, I hate sports, a lot of them. So like, I just never figured it as a sport. It's just an art form. It's just a way of expression, you know, like it was way more badass back then, you know, like it was way more rock star and just like, as corny as it is, it was, you know, some pro skate friends that are way more rock star than any fucking rock star I've ever met, you know?
Oh yeah.
They're like, yeah, they really just live the life, you know, and go for it. And I think it's just really admirable.
Well, it was, and it wasn't like, you know, an outlaw culture, like, you know, a lot of outlaw cultures are, but it was an outlaw culture. Like, you weren't supposed to be skating when people were skating. Like, you were getting in trouble, you're getting tickets, you're getting chased around by cops. Like, it was standing in opposition to authority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Like, I have a, even to this day, like, we played a show the other weekend, I almost got into a fight with the security guard because I still have that, like, an immediate just, like, frustration with security and, like, you know, authority and people just being basic assholes. So
that's how Mike Vallely became a folk hero.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's why Mike Vallely singing Black Flag or whatever. Yeah. So I think it's just, it's in all of us. If you're a skater, you kind of just have this, like, this bit of a fuck you to the system mentality. I think you always have it.
You mentioned growing, you know, mentioned your dad being involved in music and stuff. So I guess you grew up in, like, a pretty music heavy household.
Yeah. Yeah. Super. Pretty, like, my mom's not musical. My sister's not that musical. Well, she has been now. She started picking up the bass later in life. I got her a bass guitar for her 30th and she started playing in a friend's all girl band.
That's awesome.
Cool. But, like, yeah, I think it's just from a young age, I was just, my dad was a muso, so I was just super drawn to it. He didn't really, like, shove it down our throats as such, but, like, my sister's first word was Bo Diddley. So it was there. So, yeah, and every night I would fall asleep to, like, Muddy Waters and Sonny Terry and Jimmy Reed and John Lee Hooker and Little Walter and all these dudes. So that was literally just my religion. Like, every night I would just fall asleep to this blues music, and Blues Brothers was, like, the best thing I'd ever seen. And so I was just super obsessed with all that stuff from a young age.
Was that sort of the first music you were exposed to, kind of rhythm and blues stuff?
Yeah, it was the first stuff. Like, my dad loves that stuff. You know, he's a, like me, singer and harmonica player mainly and stuff. So, like, it was just naturally what I was just drawn to. Yeah, it's just something that's just always just resonated, connected with me straight away. And still does. Like, I just can't ever get over it. I just, you know, I don't. And then all that stuff, you know, then it stemmed, like, from there, then rock and roll and then punk and all that stuff. Like, sort of just went around in a circle, but always keep going back to blues and soul music and stuff. And but yeah, it's all sort of just in amongst itself. I guess it depends on what the vibe is or what the background is. But yeah, it also, like, I have a lot of soft spots for songs that, you know, I probably shouldn't have them for, but it's because it was a song to a skate part or something that I grew up watching on repeat, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It also amazes me every time I go to Australia, just how, you know, like, at the surface sort of the musical history is, like, a lot of places, like, you know, I'm Canada, you got to search to find out about all our classic punk bands. But, you know, we come back from playing a show at night, turn on TV, and then they're playing, like, The Colored Balls or an X video. It's wild.
Colored Balls, mate. Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah. My dad was showing me Colored Balls videos because he grew up with all those dudes, like, playing in those scenes and stuff, all the Sunbury festivals and all that stuff. And he was showing me this video the other night of Lobby Lloyd, like, recording, like, Colored Balls, and they're all, like, sitting around the studio and they're all stoned off their head. And he's like, and he points out to his girlfriend he's with now, and he's like, oh, check her out, that's her there, she was dating Lobby Lloyd back then or whatever. And they're all just stoned out of their mind, like, falling asleep on the couch.
That's awesome. So was your dad a Sharpie?
No, he was not a Sharpie. He's definitely definitely not a Sharpie, but he was more of a, like, just stoner hippie guy. Like, he played in bands like Carson.
Okay.
And later on he had the Dingoes, which was more success. But, like, Carson was, like, the boogie blues band that they would just do these big, like, you know, sort of like Canned Heat-esque sort of type jams. And alongside all that, Lobby Lloyd and Billy Thorpe and AC/DC and all that stuff.
That's so he grew up with awesome.
He grew up with all those dudes playing shows, like, throughout his 20s.
That's amazing. That's the other thing, that, like, going to Melbourne and going to, like, Vicious Sloth Records and just kind of, like, looking at these videos, like, you know, photos of Sharpies and, like, listening to Sharpie records and stuff, and finding out there's this whole crazy culture that I don't know, like no one I ever met outside of Melbourne had ever heard of. Even other parts of Australia, no one had heard of it.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's so funny. Yeah, it's like, you know, first time I heard like Amel and Stiffers, I got them to come support Murlocs like a few years ago when like, you know, it was like, you know, I got them to come play with us and they were just so fanning out that my dad was in Carson because they just religiously loved watching Sunbury and all that stuff. And they're just, yeah, as you can see, they're trying to bring back the whole Sharpie thing, which is so, you know, it's just hilarious. Someone like my dad or like, you know, anyone, but it's awesome as well at the same time.
That's what I also love is that there's all these like micro scenes that kind of pop up, like, you know, like,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
you know, like the tiny band stuff or like all these other little like things that are just kind of like movements. It feels like art movements almost.
Yeah, yeah, they're all like Amel, for instance, we're all from like the south side, whereas we're all sort of from the north side of Melbourne, and they're also from like interstate and stuff. So they were from a whole sort of different scene, and then once they play with Murlocs, the next minute they were just like, you know, Eric from Flightless saw him at the Murlocs gig, and then like wanted to sign him, and then we brought him with us to America. And you know, I'm always like, every time I go out to see a gig, I'm sort of just meeting new bands and mutual friends of friends, you know, that are just like, and it just amazes me. I think a lot of the time, you know, it's so easy to lose track of the scene here because there's just so much sick stuff happening all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember like, yeah. I remember hearing like at the time that all record sales were plummeting all over the world, Australian domestic music sales were the only place that music sales were increasing. You know, like it feels like, it feels like there's like a real passion for Australian music.
Yeah, for sure. Like, don't mean to toot our own horn, but it's really amazing, you know, like especially being able to tour and play all over the world and try and go see bands or like, you know, pick decent supports and you know, just be trying to like keep tabs on like good stuff that's happening all over the world. I just come home to Melbourne and I go to the pub and I just see something that's just world class, you know.
Yeah,
and it's just shits over everything else.
Well, it just feels like there's like I don't know, like this like current of rock and roll that runs through the musical DNA that's just like unlike any other place on earth, where it just like wave after wave of incredible bands are coming out. And it's like, and I guess it's going back to like, you know, the AC/DC, your dad's band, and like, you know, Colored
Ball, yeah,
Bobby Lloyd, like these, this sort of foundation that was built. And I guess even the Easy Beats before that.
Yeah, yeah, hell yeah, Easy Beats are the best. Like that's all just, you know, it's the Young Brothers and all that stuff. It's like there's so much deep roots, and at the end of the day they're all immigrants. Like my dad moved here from England when he was like 11, and you know, like similar thing with AC/DC and you know, all that stuff. I think it's just like this weird sort of, at the end of the day, sort of like immigrant convict like hunger to, you know, sort of, you sort of got to like fight for your, you know, your right to, you know, to, you know, be, because we're so far away from everything. It's like so hard to get out of Australia. And, you know, and once you do, I think people just go gung-ho for it because, yeah, it's, there's definitely, there's something going on. I don't know what it is. It's just, it's always just constantly going. And there's always new shit.
What was the first concert you went to?
First concert I went to, it's hard because, you know, I grew up from baby like going to gigs because of my dad.
Yeah, totally. But
the first, like, I always just think of like the first moment where I can remember going to like a proper concert or whatever and being like, you know, it's not just at the pub or whatever. It was probably like Ray Charles. I remember going to see Ray Charles. Dad played at this Melbourne Blues Festival thing, and I remember being on my mum's shoulders or my dad's shoulders, and I remember Ray Charles like hobbling out onto the stage. I don't remember like any songs or anything, but I just remember being like, holy shit, it's a guy from Blues Brothers. And like
that's an awesome first show though.
Yeah, that's definitely one that I've always just been like, you know, like a real early memory of being like at a big concert and being like, well, you know, seeing like all these people go crazy for this old dude.
What was the first kind of band you remember going to that was like kind of you pulling yourself there, like saying I want to go and see this thing?
I don't know. It's probably been some stuff lately. Well, not since COVID, but like, you know, I guess in and out of COVID, like recently, oh, like my good friend's band Smarts here in Melbourne, they're an awesome punk band. They're real, you know, they have other bands like share same members in bands like Living Eyes and Oz Mutants and stuff like that. They got a new band, yeah, Smarts, who are awesome. So I remember like pushing myself to go see them because I just love their new album. And yeah, so I think after COVID, they played a show in like my hometown and in or like down in Geelong where I grew up. And yeah, I remember going out of my way to go see them. And they're just amazing because they're just all incredible players. They're all like around my age, you know, but been playing in different bands forever. And yeah, this is like a new thing they started. So probably that.
Where's that band God from? Are they from Melbourne?
They're from Melbourne. Okay. Yeah, they're from Camberwell, which is like a suburb, a middle-class suburb.
They're a band that I think, you know, obviously probably gets a lot more appreciation and sort of reverence in Australia. But I just feel like they're one of the great sort of underappreciated rock and roll bands kind of after that first wave.
Yeah. Yeah. They were all super young at the time too. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was the first kind of punk concert you remember going to?
Ooh. It's a hard one. I feel like I probably didn't go to a proper punk concert till I was like,
or even
late
shows.
Teens.
Like, yeah, what was
the shows? Yeah. Oh. I can't actually think. I don't know what to really clarify as punk as such. But we grew up going playing a lot of gigs at the National Hotel, the Nash in Geelong, which is where we all played in bands like constantly. And I don't know, probably even thinking about like the first time I saw the OCs or something, like was really raucous and like really hit to the bone. But yeah, and then other than that, just like so many just like, you know, come and gone small town punk bands and stuff. But I think something like the OCs or something is probably something that's stuck with me. Because other than that, I think there's been a lot of them. You know, I had friends' punk bands like Kremlings and stuff. There's a band called Kremlings. They were rad.
They put out any records, Kremlings?
Kremlings, yeah, they put out a few records. Oh, they put out two records. They put out one, maybe an EP and then another record as well. But yeah, there wasn't many copies or anything. It was pretty small time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was sort of stuff like that in the early days. I can remember seeing it, that sort of dingy band room.
The OCs are one of the best live bands ever. Like just unbelievable.
Yeah, hands down.
I've had to play after them twice and it's the worst slot every time. You know, it's going to be no matter how good you do.
Yeah. They go ballistic. Yeah, I remember like the first proper time I saw them at this festival. And it was, you know, it was like their first time out and it was like an early slot. So there wasn't that many people around. And then next time they came back, I went back to the same pub where they played. And there's all these stories, like, you know, like Stu and Gizzard saw him for the first time. And it was just like from there, just continuously took so much influence from that to start Gizzard and everything when he saw that. But like, yeah, I remember like going to see them the time after that. And they came back and it was like that first note and people were just like, climbing the rafters and it was just like beers. I remember standing there and we all had pints of beer and like the first note and all the beer just like flew up in the air and stuff like that.
Do you ever hear of the Hospitals, his band before doing the OCs, John Dwyer's band?
Nah. I only know like Coach Whips and stuff.
So this was after the Coach Whips before the OCs. He did this band, the Hospitals.
Oh, right.
Two records. It was a two-piece. And they played in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And the opener was going on forever. So they just set up on the floor and started playing in the middle of the opener set. And the promoter came running over and tried to unplug the amp. And John just chopped him in the head with the guitar and just cracked it on his skull.
Is that footage. It's on the internet somewhere. There was footage.
That's the one. That's the footage.
Oh, was that the promoter? I thought it was just some guy trying to like fight the drummer or something.
No, that's the promoter. That's Dan Burke. Also, if you ever seen the the Jay Riotard video where he beats up someone on stage,
yeah.
There's a promoter who comes out afterwards and starts screaming. It's the same promoter.
Oh my god, that poor guy. Why is he always copping it?
I don't know. He definitely has been the guy that, like, he did the first White Stripe show in Toronto when they were still, like, you know, just, I think it was when they were still just on Italy Records, even. Like, he's, yeah, like, but, you know, like, champion rock and roll for a very long time, but has suffered. He's a Toronto legend. So, next time you guys come to Toronto, I have to introduce you to Dan Burke.
Yeah, you got it. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's crazy shit.
So, Sam Bros Automobile would play a lot, I guess. You guys put out like three recordings, right? Four recordings?
Yeah. We did like Sam did some little first EP. It was just him and me or something. And then we did like, three albums. It was Beat Boom Soul. There was It Has Just Begun. That was probably the first one because it had just begun. And then there was Lamb Roast Sandwich, which is just like, you know, Lamb Roast Ambrose, and then Sandwich was Sam. And like that was our last like EP we did, and Stu from Gizzard recorded it for us and mixed it and stuff. And that was us, like, you know, being like 16 or like 17 or something, 18. And then it was us like, putting that out and coming up to Melbourne. And, I started the Murlocs at that point, and then starting to play in King Gizzard. And we were playing some gigs with Sam Bros, and it was doing all right, I guess, but it wasn't much buzz. You know, Gizzard was starting to get all this traction, and so was Murlocs as well. So it just sort of felt like it ran its course, you know. We'd have been a band for like, we'd been playing together since we were like 10 or whatever. Yeah. So, it just felt like it wasn't really going anywhere at the time, and we just sort of invested in other stuff.
So you had all three going at the same time at one point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had all three going at one point, yeah. And then like Gizzard played like Merida Festival, which is like, you know, the be-all and end-all festivals for us here. And I remember that moment of playing that and then knowing that things were going to start taking off, and, you know, we were going to be able to start playing shows interstate and doing bigger things. And Sam Rose was just feeling like it was getting a bit stale at the time. It was a bit of a sad one, really, like, but it just sort of happened naturally in that way. And then Sam Cooper, he started playing with a bunch of other people as well, and been in multiple bands and still is. So and we recently connected, like, we've been best mates forever. Mm. But we recently started making music last year before COVID. Damn, I don't know how long ago it was. We made a song together. Like, it was a song of his, and then I like wrote some verses, and so it's a bit of a duet.
And, reunion.
Yeah, so we've got that one track, and that's sort of tucked away, and we'll probably try and do some more stuff for it, but it was supposed to go on this Flightless compilation album that is yet to see the light of day. So hopefully that can come out soon, because it's been sitting there with everyone else's songs for a while.
And was it like, were all these three bands kind of playing in the same sort of scene, or did they all kind of exist separately in the very beginning? Like, were they like, or were there like,
No, it's all very much. Yeah. It's very much the same scene, literally like supporting each other and stuff. Like, I remember supporting Gizzard and stuff with Sam Bros a few times and things like that. Like the bass player Lucas in Sam Bros plays in Gizzard and still does, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was all very, and like Stu and Cook, who in Gizzard played in another band called Revolver and Sun, and so like Sam Rose and Revolver and Sun played heaps of shows together, so we were all mates from like, you know, our teenage years. So by the time Gizzard started and I started the Murlocs with, like, you know, I started the Murlocs with the the drummer that me and Sam went to high school with, and the guitarist Callum in Murlocs was already, he'd played with Sam Rose before, like got up and played guitar once or twice. And then once he joined Murlocs, I got him back in properly in Sam Rose, and he was playing as well in that. So yeah, it was all very, all the same friends, same scene.
It's so wild, like how, you know, there's are these kind of like waves that kind of keep happening where like, there just seems like there's like a deluge of like a whole new crop of incredible bands that are popping up, you know, in Melbourne or in Australia in general, I guess. Like, who'd you kind of see as being part of that wave for you guys, or like the band that sort of like was the precursor? Like you mentioned Eddie Current earlier, like were they kind of like, do you see them as being a band that kind of like kicked off, or was it, or is it ultimately kind of you guys? Cause you guys are always brought up as being the band that sort of brings about this next big wave of garage rock or rock and roll, what have you.
Yeah, I guess so. I think we're starting to feel old now, you know. Some of the guys and girls are having kids, and I'm like 30 next year, which is weird. But yeah, I think growing up, a few of us saw Eddie Current's Pressure Ring, but they sort of like were gone by the time we were like discovered them, you know, or like we weren't even really old enough to be going to like proper shows unless we were like playing and somehow like allowed to be there. So yeah, we kind of missed a few things that were like in their prime, I'd say, by the time we were playing pubs and doing all that stuff. So yeah, I don't know, there's been plenty of stuff. It's hard to sort of think about it. I think being down the coast, we, you know, we played shows or like went to saw like Vasco Era, who were like a sort of hometown hero band from Polo Bay that, you know, that did pretty well. And, you know, and also some of my best friends were in the band Frowning Clouds, who were like a big influence on all of us, who were like the same age as us, but like, you know, they started that band when they were like 15 or something. And then next minute they were playing big festivals and doing tours with Tame Impala and stuff. And like Tame Impala was like at the same level. So yeah, it all sort of stemmed from just sort of what was around our scene, what would sort of come into town in Geelong, or like, you know, going up to Melbourne, even though it was only an hour away, was, you know, rare and hard for us to go see shows because I was, you know, still not old enough or whatever, depending on what it was. So yeah, I guess it all varied, but by the time we were like coming up and playing in Melbourne frequently, sort of lots of stuff that can't even really pinpoint what anything was a big influence. Sort of a mixed bag of things, really.
Well, that's the thing, is the band is just pulling from so many different places, you know, like I think, you know,
yeah, that's it.
It gives it that sound, I guess, is the fact that you guys are all pulling different things in there.
Yeah. I think, you know, me being from a like blues soul sort of background, and then like, you know, Joe and Gizzard or whatever is from like a big, like he's had a career as being like a techno, like a DJ, like electronic artist. And then you know, Callum Shortall in Murlocs used to be in like heavy metal bands and stuff, and yeah, so it's sort of all over the shop, really.
Did you guys self-release the early records, like that first 10-inch? Did you guys put that out yourselves?
Beach, yeah, that was just put out. I don't think it was even put out on Flightless Records yet. I'm not sure if that might have been the first Flightless thing.
I think it's self-release. I can't remember. Like the one that goes for crazy money. I think it's a self-release thing.
Yeah, I think it is just self-release. I think you're right. Yeah, because I remember that coming out. I remember like recording it and playing the show for it. Yeah, I remember Stu had bad gastro at that show that we played at the Tote for it, and he was like throwing up and shitting all over the place before we played. But yeah, I think that was GTA. I think that was self-release. Yeah. And so was our first EP with Murlocs. That was self-release as well. Yeah, I don't even kind of remember how I even got that done. I think I just took it to like the local pressing plant thing here in Melbourne and just printed out a bunch of CDs. And luckily, just from the skating scene, I have so many like amazing artistic friends that I've been able to like collaborate with all our artwork and other stuff, like Jason Galea. I met him through skateboarding originally. And same with a lot of clips and stuff we do. It sort of comes from, yeah, that sort of background.
Well, it feels like, yeah, the visuals are such a part of the band, you know, like it's a complete kind of vision. I guess with the Murlocs as well, too, like it looks like you put a lot of thought into how you present the band on like not just a sonic level.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think all our artwork and stuff is pretty thought out. And it's always pretty like-minded of who we work with and stuff. Even with the recent Bittersweet Demons album artwork, that's, again, that's a friend I grew up with from skating, again. And I've known since I was like 8 or 9 or something, you know, and it's sort of just being into the same stuff, knowing them, knowing the band well enough, knowing me, you know, well enough. Yeah, not having to like force it, and you sort of just have these people that just in the same sort of mind frame of what you're going for and just get it. Makes things easier.
It's also amazing, like how, you know, time and time again, how many cool creative people are drawn to things like, you know, punk or skateboarding, you know, just, it just never ceases to amaze me. Like, you know, not just people in music, obviously, but like visual artists or filmmakers or writers, or it just feels like,
yeah.
You know, these people are marginalized and this is the place they feel accepted.
Yeah, for sure. If it's accepted or just like as well admire and like, you know, wish they were a part of it. You know, or like want to hear more about it or know about it or try and like be around it, you know. I think a lot of people sort of grow up and, you know, sort of asking other people about stories of their youth, you know, think, you know, so too intimidated to try and jump into it themselves or whatever.
Yeah, like, or just, you know, you feel that pull to the scene and then, yeah, you don't feel the pull, you don't have that same sense of I don't know, whatever madness drives people to want to get up on stage. You know, you have that drive to create, but yeah, you don't have the need to kind of put yourself out there in that way, because it does open yourself up to a lot of other shit.
Yeah, for sure. You definitely can end up in some sticky situations, that's for sure. But it's all a part of it.
Well, I think it's also just the ego trap, you know, like it just, you can never walk away from it in the same way you can if you're just like a visual artist.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's a thing about being like the whole, even the punk scene in general. I've never been like super around it, like in a sense, because it just sort of, you just sort of get a taste of it and then you get a bit sort of like, oh, you know, these people are just sort of like, you know, even now, whatever, in the last few years since like King Gizzard started taking off more, I'd go back to these same punk sort of venues here in Melbourne or whatever, and people would be like, come up to me and be like, oh, you and King Gizzard, eh? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I thought, and walk off, you know, like kind of just sort of staunch you out, because it's like, it's so, they're also just like anti, you know, making it that everything has to be underground and,
but you gotta,
this and that, and it's cool. But then you're just drawn to that, and sort of just like, all right, that's sick. Much prefer that than someone like, you know, fanning out. It's funny.
Well, exactly. That keeps you sane, right? Like the fact, like, you know, that brings you back down to earth when you need it. Like, come on, a great show, go to a punk show.
It's good to be hated.
Yeah, good to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You're gonna be proud to be hated sometimes. Like, yeah. Or else you're not standing up for anything. It's funny, like even Stu and Gizzard say sometimes, like, he's like, all I want to just be in life is just a nice guy, a good, nice person. I'm like, hey man, you know, not everyone can like you. It's fine. You know, you just, sometimes it's fine to be a little hated, you know, sort of, yeah, it makes you feel normal.
Yeah. No, you definitely, you know, like you have a big tour, you come off like a bunch of big personal successes, you go to a punk show and have someone tell you, you ain't shit. Like it really, I don't know. It definitely,
completes awesome.
A transaction that way. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly, you don't go there to get praise from everyone, you go there for people to like charge you full price at the bar and and, you know, sort of hip and shoulder you as they walk past.
Yeah, exactly. Ambrose, this has been amazing. And anytime you want to come back on here and talk about Australian punk or getting shouldered at punk shows, please know the door is always open.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks. It's been fun. It's been good. I didn't realize how much ammo I had to talk about this stuff.
Thank you, Ambrose, for coming on the show. And Ambrose will be back to talk about Gizzard, to talk about the Murlocs, to talk about Australian music, whatever he wants at some point in the future. It'll be a fun little chat then, too. But coming up tomorrow on the show, from the band Bad Religion, we are hitting the road. We're getting in the car and going for a drive. And not the after-dinner kind, because we're going to use our hands and we're going to use our minds with Greg Graffin. That's right. Greg is in a car, and we're there for the ride with him, and we talk about nerdy punk shit. This is a amazing one. Oh, my gosh. It's not the longest episode, because he was driving from place to place, and, you know, we deal with some issues. But, oh, we get deep. We talk about some stuff, like... We talk about a lot of stuff. I'm not gonna spoil it for you right now, but I think you'll be excited for this one. All right, that's it for me. Remember, as always, Black Lives Matter. The lives of Indigenous people matter. We need to protect trans kids, and we need to help trans people protect themselves. There needs to be a stop of hate and violence towards Asian people and towards people of different faiths. There just needs to be a stop to all this hateful bullshit. This is in politics. This is just human rights. These are just people trying to be free, just trying to be who they are. So get involved with organizations, get yourself educated, see what's going on in the world, see where you can potentially lend support or lend help or do something. Bring about some change, you know? We got to fuck all this fascist shit and get it out of our lives, you know? Like, fuck these Nazis, fuck all that stuff. Like, it's just, ain't no room. Ain't no room in the small, small world for them and their hate, to paraphrase the great DBS. Go ahead and do something creative for yourself. You know, start drawing, start a band, start a fans. You never know where it could take you. You never know. You know, you might be playing harmonica in a band with your friends. And then next thing you know, you're putting out like 12 live records and 2 new LPs in a few short months. I'm envious of Ambrose's drive, man. Like, I wish I could put up that much stuff. Holy jeez, that's incredible. But you know, it starts by doing something creative. So just go and try something. Do something. Sign your organ donor cards, because by the time they come looking for those organs, you do not need them. You say, take the shit out of my dead ass body and just deal with it. Give it to someone else, because it can give someone else the gift of life, you know? So try it. Well, it's not really a try situation. It's more like a do or do not. There is no try, but sign that card. Speaking of things that you can try, though, try meditating. Maybe it'll work. I try it now, and I really do find it has helped me. I should probably even do it more. I think it'll help me more. Oh, my gosh. This could be like a complete reorientation. Maybe this thing will be turned out a meditator, and we'll just switch it, and it'll just be all about meditating from now on. Nah, that's not going to happen. That is not going to happen. All right. Stay safe. And I will see you on the next episode. I love you. Thanks for listening. Bye.